pull in, I back up to the scales, and I go in the store, and a woman in front of me is buying a license for her son, and the guy behind the counter goes, "You need a license?" I go, yeah, I need a license, because I figured he saw me backing up because the window's right there. So it just washed over me at that time, because earlier that year, when we buy our license at the beginning of the year, I remember, like, because I'm always on my wife, like, "You sure you got your muzzle license? Sure you got this license? You sure you got that?" And when I did mine that year, I remember buying a pheasant stamp. And I'm like, "Oh, hell." I'm like, "Well, I just gave the state $36. You know, I just donated it. What's the, no big deal, right?"
Right.
But it washed over me, and I realized I bought my pheasant stamp instead of my muzzleloader stamp.
Oh, no. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Northwoods Whitetails. I am your host, Travis Williams, and we sit down today with Kevin Harrison. So, Kevin, tell the listeners a little bit about who you are, what you do for work, where you're from.
Yeah, I am. I'm a native to New Hampshire. I live from northern Maine to Montana to Colorado, and I've settled back in New Hampshire. I obviously grew up hunting. I had an older brother, Frank, that introduced me to hunting. So I was very fortunate there. He took me hunting, camping, all that good stuff. And then later on in my 20s, I moved up to northern Maine. I was a hunting guide and did that for about a decade. Moved back to New Hampshire. Then I got into electrical sales. So...
Oh, great. Another salesman.
I know. Well, it's good, though. I get paid every 2 weeks, so it's pretty good.
Yeah, I know. I love sales. It's a good racket.
Yeah. So now I'm in the Lakes region right down the road from you. And
awesome.
Yeah. So.
Well, let's kill some bucks.
Let's do it.
Thanks for coming over. It's absolutely good seeing you. We're neighbors, but we never see each other.
I know. We're like two ships in the night.
I literally feel like we saw each other more when you weren't my neighbor.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, back when, so you worked for Ryan Bonner's cousin, Jeremy, for a long time.
Yeah.
And I was working in Exeter, and we'd see you at lunch, and yeah, I feel like I saw you once a week, and now I see you. You literally live, 3 miles down the road, and I see you once every year, feels
yeah,
like.
Yeah, bumping you at the grocery store.
Yeah. Yeah. The old Hannaford's there.
Yeah.
No. Well, listen, I really appreciate you making the trip up tonight, and... spring is upon us. I guess the next thing we'll probably look for is some antlers. You do any of that anymore?
I don't. We used to do a lot snow machining. We, spend the winter going up north and doing that in Maine.
Yeah.
But we did try to, we thought we were going to go in and find a bunch 1 year, and where was a bunch. We didn't find any on the snow machines, but there was just so much sign. We're like, we're going to go in there. And Hal said, he goes, "We're going to pick them like blueberries in there."
Yeah.
We didn't find a one.
Yeah. So you used to do some stuff with Hal and the boys over there.
Yeah. 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 So, and we just do it to find them. And I'd take them over to Vermont and we'd sell them to just pay for the fuel for the year to do it.
Awesome.
That type of thing. So that
was good. Yeah. I never, it's funny. I look back. I was telling a story the other day. I was tracking this buck 1 year down along a lake in northern Maine, and I look up and I see this big brown, what I thought was the buck bedded. And long story short, I get up there and it's this beautiful brown antler laying palm, points down. Didn't even think about picking it. Doesn't even register in my brain. Just step over and keep going. Because back then, A, I wasn't into it. And B, just, I don't know. It just didn't. And then later on, John kind of got me into it. And yep. You're friends with John as well. And,
yep.
And now I love it. I mean, I don't get to do it much because of my job and stuff, but I love it. So
no, it's like treasure hunting. That's what I loved about it. Because I, I'm not big on just putting on miles on the snow machine, but it was fun to go and search and look and, you know, find new areas and stuff like that. But yeah, people started doing it like a job, and then people started training their dogs to do it. Then it's like, you know,
yeah,
which is great. But, man, they could fill a pickup truck with them dogs.
Unbelievable.
It's crazy. Yeah. But it's good.
Yeah, I like it for keep me kind of in somewhat of shape. And
yeah,
I call it hiking for a purpose, you know, yeah, rather than just walk up to the top of the mountain and see a view. I walk up and look for antlers. So I might go Saturday. I don't know, go flop around. But let's shoot some bucks, Kevin. I know that you're a very accomplished hunter. You know, killed a lot of nice ones and enjoy it very much. I think that's probably more important than the deer you shot is the fact that you love it. But so this year you killed, what was one you shot this year?
It was a 10-pointer. I don't know if I should say it was 207 or 209. I left the privates on it, so yeah. I know that's a...
Well, I'll tell you what. If he was 209, man, I want to see the privates.
That's what I was thinking about, 2 pounds for them. I
mean, that's pretty.
That would cover it, I think, 2 pounds.
So we'll go with 208.
Okay. I'm good with that. I'm good with that.
And then you had... Because I remember I ran into you at Hannaford's, weird,
yeah,
and you had lime there the year before.
Yeah, so I pretty much would, if I did go out in the woods, I'd hunt my way out, putt my way out, and I'd nap for a couple hours and then hunt my way back. Yeah, so I had it pretty bad then, so it's just, you just can't do stuff.
Yeah.
You just can't do it.
You know? Well, it's funny. I think... when I saw you, you were like, yeah, you know, I'm just not really that into it because of this and that, and you were bird hunting and whatever. And I said, I saw you again. I think it was Case and Keg. We ran into each other. And I said, yeah. So you going to kill one this year? And you, yeah. Yeah, I think I am. And I've talked to some friends. I'm like, you know, Kevin's one of those guys that you can just tell. He like, yeah, you know, I'm going to hunt a little this year. I'm kind of into bird hunting this year. But, man, when you decide that it's go time, I'm like, well, he's going to shoot a big one this year. And sure enough.
Yeah, it worked out. It worked out. It was a early season buck, so that helped with the two, you know, going over 200.
Right, yep.
But again, it's one of them things where not great conditions, didn't have snow, it was the second week in a muzzleloader, and I was going to actually go one direction in the morning, and at the last minute, I decided to go another direction and stay on this side of the river, or the side of the river I was on, and I actually was just left camp. I was about 150 yards down the road and had a deer blowing at me. And long story short, it only ran like 40 yards. So I went to grunt, and obviously there's pine needles down my tube, so that didn't sound right. And there's a big berm, and I did get up on that, but then I couldn't see down the road. And I said, and it was still dark. Like, it was still just, you could see, but not great. And there's a big blowdown, and I finally get down off that berm, went up the road, and I didn't think that buck went far. And he was just on the side of this big, huge white pine blowdown, and he finally, enough was enough, and he took off. And I could see him, but I could hear his antlers tinging off the whips and stuff like that, and then he ran another 150 yards or 100 yards, and he started blowing at me, kind of just like things a buck does, and he sounded just like a buck, and when he was blowing, and so I figured I'll go down the road and just kind of stay on the road in case he's going to try to swing back up, and kind of across from our camp is a big bowl, and on the west side of the bowl it kind of comes down to the river, and I got to that, nothing, so I said I'm just going to hunt up the spurt, like that edge of the bowl there, and go clockwise. And I was just, like I said, it was dry, it was, you know, a bunch of beech leaves, all that, it's noisy, but what are you going to do? So I just still hunting pretty much and calling and, you know, checking for sign, and I worked my way up to the top up by the green growth, and there was some buck sign up in there. You know, obviously I was like, I wish I was here 2 days ago. It seemed like it was that old, but, and I just worked my way around, and I just pitched over the backside of that bowl, and it's kind of a big, it's like a beach flat, kind of. You probably know where I'm talking about. And I was debating if I was going to go hunt through that beach flat and then down into this low ground and then work my way back, or I was just going to hunt the backside of the bowl and just drop down to camp, because by then it was, had been 2:15 by the time I got there. And I remember sitting down, I sat down on a rock, and I wasn't too stressed about anything. You know, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I remember thinking, like, I'm out in the open right now, and there's a bunch, there's some beach, winter beach by me there, and I'm like, man, I should go sit there. I'm like, I ain't gonna sit there. I'm fine right here. Probably wasn't a nice spot to sit there, so I decided I'll stay where I was. And it was about, I sat there 20, 25 minutes, and I stood up and still debating on where I was going to go and how I was going to do it. And all of a sudden, I just hear, ch-ch-ch. And I caught, I must have been looking in that direction somewhat, because I caught it, and I could just see some legs. So there's a deer right there. And it was like, it was at least 80 yards, you know. I saw a deer anyway. So it was going right to left and disappeared. And I was looking and looking. And then all of a sudden, oh, it's coming towards me. I could see it's feeding, because it could have fed right out of my, it could have fed right out of my life right then if it won't, you know, just went the other way. I probably never would have saw it again. And then it just slowly was feeding and feeding and feeding. And I was actually, like I said, I was out in the open so much, I actually brought my gun up to, like, hold it up, because I'm like, he's going to see me moving, you know. Paranoid probably anyway, you know. And sure enough, he kept feeding towards me, and he was about 50 yards, and he went left to right. He went through an open, and I said, well, there was an open in there. And then, for some reason, he came back, and he came back through that open, and he just wound up stopping there. And I had it on him, and I'm like, well, you know, frigate, you know, boom. I see him rear up, and obviously, you know, the smoke. And I can hear him, like, running, but he's not really going anywhere, and he's not, like, thrashing. It was odd. And the smoke clears, and he's walking towards me at, like, quarter and two, and I actually got, I'm like, oh, he's gonna tip, because I could see where his, I had hit him. I'm like, he's gonna tip over, and I could hear him breathing and laboring. So I got my phone out, actually, and I'll film him tipping over.
Yeah, I think you sent me that.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah. I'm like,
we'll try and put that on somewhere.
So then I'm like, a film of like 14 seconds or something. Like, I better stop doing this before I'm telling people the story of how, oh yeah, that's the buck I shot. Like, oh, how much it weigh? Oh, I never got him.
Yeah.
So, and then he had stopped and he kept walking, and then he beds down about, I don't know, 25, 30 yards away from me, but he's facing me. I can see his head like dropping and dropping. And I'm like, all right, he's going to die. And then all of a sudden, like, his head would come up a little bit. And then, you know, time goes by with those. It was probably 30 seconds that felt like, you know, 30 minutes. So I've got an encore. And the first 6 inches to get that bullet down through there isn't as easy as it used to be. So, like, I'm going to try it. So I put my speed loader loaded up. I take my ramrod out, and I'm, like, moving as slow as I can. I'm trying to get that down, and there's a tree, like, just kind of out of reach where I'd have to step. So I start to move, and all of a sudden that buck's head come right up, and, like, he got focused right on me. I'm like, oh, man. So then his head goes back down. I finally, my ball starter was in my pack, so I wind up, finally get my pack off. I load it up. I'm like, I'm going to close the distance on him. I'm loaded up now. I'm going to close the distance on him. So I probably took like 3-4 steps thinking I closed the distance on him, and boom, you know, and I freaking miss. I don't even know what happened. So he didn't go nowhere. So I reload. Now I'm like, I reload. He winds up. I actually was reloading my speed loader, and I put, when I poured it in, I'm like, did I just see one pellet go down in there too? I'm like, well, I don't want to shoot 200. I don't want to like reload and shoot 200 grains. So I wind up dumping the barrel out, putting another one in there, you know, really making this an event. And then I reload. And this time I walked up, boom, I hit him. Then he went and I wound up shooting him one more time, but I couldn't believe it. And then he wound up dying there.
They're tough critters, man.
It was crazy because they were like all in the rib cage. I'm like, what is going on with this? But it is what it is.
So is that the first deer you've shot out of your new camp?
Nope. The first year we had the camp, again, it was muzzle loader season. And it was going to be like 70 degrees that afternoon. So I hunted down by camp in the morning. It was brisk. And I will tell you this.
So before we jump into this one, because I want to hear this one. So that buck was a 10-pointer, New Hampshire deer.
Yep.
And it weighed
209
with the man parts
on it. Yeah.
beautiful, beautiful buck. I remember. We'll, for everybody listening, we'll be sure to share that picture. Yeah, beautiful, beautiful deer, cool hunt. And so.
Yeah, you guys might, I don't know, you guys might have footage of that because John come over and.
Didn't he help you drag it?
Yeah, he went down and he come in and met my wife, Amy, and then she was just driving down the road to meet me because there was, I could slab across the top of the ridge and hit a spur road, and then I just dragged down that old winter road.
Yep.
Right to where the truck was, so. When Amy was backing out, he was coming down, so they jumped in, and they met me up on that spur road. So
cool.
It worked out.
We'll put whatever we have up, obviously. Yeah.
I don't know if he did. He just, because I saw his GoPro there. Yeah. So, yeah. So yeah, it worked out, so it was good. They were able to be there when I was bringing it out.
That's so much. You know, cool. For me, that's 90% of it. It's the, obviously, the tranquility, the hunt, the experience, but then being able to share that moment with friends and family is... Like when, you know, I've gone out and killed a buck and then, you know, like load it in your truck, drive home, hang it up, nobody's around. It's still fun and I'm obviously super grateful and want to do that, but there's just something about having family and friends either there for the recovery or, you know, like it's what I love about camp. You come back and whether you're successful in a harvest or you, no matter what, especially hunting the big woods like we are so passionate about.
Yeah,
there's always something that happens. There's always a story.
Oh, yeah, especially you got snow. You always got a story
one
way or the other.
So the first year, 70 degrees.
Yep, hunted the morning, and I was like, and again, I'll bring this up because I do think it's important. But like Hal always used to say, it's 2 points connecting. And sometimes I'll say that to stay in the game.
Right.
You know, and I remember all that morning being like, it's 2 points connecting. It's 2 points. I still even say it to myself when I'm in the woods because you do never know.
Just to pause for a second. So you keep talking about Hal. It's Hal Blood. So you were part of the Big Woods Buck team for how long?
Probably almost 10 years.
Yeah.
So I guided for Hal.
Cool.
Yeah. So I did that for
10
years.
Just so the listeners know, I know you and I know that, but, you know, so the listeners know.
Yep.
And I know you have nothing but amazing things to say about Hal. He's a great guy.
I was very fortunate.
Yeah.
He's extremely fortunate.
We've had a lot of conversations, and he's a legend.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. Fantastic individual. So I was just hunting, and I had never, like, this is the first year ever hunting this piece of ground. So I hunted, nothing. I actually came back to camp. We were redoing camp, so I actually built, like, a partition wall midday. And it was like 2:30, and I, like, now it's like 70. Like, I get jeans on, T-shirt, and I have, like, a light button-up shirt around my waist, you know. So I headed out in that same spur road that I dragged that deer down this past year, I was heading up that, and I honestly can't remember if I was stopped or, because I remember being like, I didn't want to get sweated up, and I was really, I'm like, I'm just going to go up to the green growth and try to catch something coming, like, out of that bowl or running the ridge up top or just.
Makes sense with that warm weather. They'd be up there.
Yeah, just, like, I was, it was warm enough. I was going to be comfortable enough just to sit and be content and not get cold and just hang out, really. So I wound up heading up there and, like I said, taking my time, not trying to get sweated up. And it's a good old winter road. And all of a sudden, I just caught something coming from the right. And I don't know. It was like, I think it just, because there's a brook down below that road. And I think it's steep. From what I can remember, I feel like I just caught it like popping up over. And I don't know if I was stopped or I was walking. And I all of a sudden, it just like picked its head up. Like, I was kind of like, man, was that like, thinking back, I'm like, was it like feeding? Or I have a feeling like it was almost like checking, like scent checking something, or it was maybe it was on a doe or something. I don't know. Like, just the way it was. And it snapped its head up, and I was like, oh, like, I'm going to take a shot at this one here. So I just brought my gun up, and it was like, that might have been 35, 40 yards. And he just stepped behind a tree, and there was a whip there, but I'm like, I got an opening. Because the more I think about stuff, the worse off I am. So I'm like, I got an opening. Boom. And again, muzzleloader. I see the thing mule kick, and it just, it was like, it was fun. It was kind of wild because it was like trying to, it looked like it was running full speed, but in slow motion, because, like, he was screwed up. It went, like, into the point of his shoulder. So he was, like, dead on his feet. And he just, I never even, like, went to reload or nothing. And he just ran right across that wide open winter road. And then he ran another 35, 40 yards and dumped. And so I went over. He was done. I took a picture of him. And it was 3:07. Was the time on that picture. So I was really out there for, and that was when I took the picture. So it was like really like 20 minutes, 25 minutes that I was out there. So then I drug him down that spur road, went out and grabbed him. And then this is why I call this like the 20 minute hunt that lasted 2 days. So by the time I got him back to camp, everything, it was later on. And I'm like, first deer at camp, I'll just hang him at camp and I'll bring him to the station in the morning. Because I think didn't have a scale, so I'm like, I'll just wait. Because I think at the fire station you can go. So I'm like, I'm just going to wait. I'll take him right off in the morning. So I actually had Jeep at the time.
You don't have the Jeep anymore?
No, I sold it.
Oh.
No. Dude.
That's like me and the FJ, man. I miss it.
I don't miss it at all.
Oh, you don't?
No. We took a lot of long, quiet rides together to try to build our relationship, but it was just rough. That thing, I bought a pig with lipstick, and the whole time I had that thing, it was just getting it to where somebody else would have a good rig.
So you...
It was just constant.
I thought you loved that thing every time. I thought that was like a term of endearment when you did the Psy. It was not.
I love a Jeep. I love a Jeep.
Just not that one.
No, I love the old CJ. That was a CJ 5, 1975, and I had an 80 before. I love them, but that just wore on me.
Yeah.
Wondering if you're going to get home, getting towed home. Being in Pittsburgh, losing the brakes, you know, like, you know. So, yeah. So I don't have it anymore. But I do love a Jeep.
Yep.
So a buddy of mine was there. So Trippy takes the Jeep, and he's got a truck. So I said, it'd be easier. I'll just put the buck in the truck.
Big old F-350?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's also my neighbor.
Yeah, exactly. the Rhino. We called it the Rhino.
Nice rig.
Yeah. He sold that to my brother, actually. Yeah. And so I throw it in there, and Amy was in Maine. She wasn't at camp. So I head down to, and I'm going to register it. And I pull in. I back up to the scales, and I go in the store, and a woman in front of me is buying a license for her son. And the guy behind the counter goes, "You need a license?" I go, "Yeah." I go, "Yeah, I need a license." Because I figured he saw me backing up because the window's right there. So it just washed over me at that time. Because earlier that year, when we buy our license at the beginning of the year, I remember, like, because I'm always on my wife, like, "You sure you got your muzzleloader license? Sure you got this license? You sure you got that?" And when I did mine that year, I remember buying a pheasant stamp. And I'm like, "Oh, hell." I'm like, "Well, I just gave the state $36. You know, I just donated. What's the, no big deal, right?"
Right.
But it washed over me, and I realized I bought my pheasant stamp instead of my muzzleloader stamp.
Oh, no.
So I'm, like, ready to, like, I'm freaking out.
Right.
So I literally go, "I'll be right back." I walk out, I jump in the truck and drive away. Because I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, I just had to,
you need,
like,
a minute to process.
I just needed a minute to process. So I'm freaking out. So I'm like, "Deer's gone. You know, I don't know what's going to happen, you know?"
Right.
So I get to our place. I'm like, from bear hunting, we have the warden's numbers, you know? So I call the warden, tell him the whole story. I said, "I bought my pheasant tag instead of my muzzleloader tag. It's right below when you, you know, with the menu there, it's the one right below your muzzleloader."
I've made the mistake. I've never actually purchased it and made them, but I've clicked on it and then been like, "Wait, what?" And I think what made me notice it was I went to check out and the amount was wrong. Because every year you buy it and you kind of have like a number in your mind. And I was like,
right.
So I went back and looked. And dude, I do that stuff every year. Like, I'll forget to buy my bear tag. And I don't bear hunt much, but I like to have it. You know, if I see a really big one, maybe, if it's not going to be a far drag.
Right.
So yeah, I totally been there. I'm sure other people listening have as well.
I don't want to be there again.
Oh, it's the worst feeling.
So I call, and so warden calls me back. Tell him the story, and I'm like, it's like just about the money, right? Like, I bought a tag, but I just bought the wrong one, and it's more. It's like twice. So he's like, "Kevin, I'll give you a call back." So again, that day, it's like 70, so I got to drive to the store, pack it with ice again. Calls me back. I missed his call, and I called him right back, and he's like, before that, I go, "Am I going to lose this deer?" And he goes, "Kevin, you're probably going to lose this deer."
Like, oh, my God.
So I, like I said, went to the store, and I come back. I'm on my way back. Calls him up. He's like, "Kevin, you're not going to lose the deer." He's like, "I called the registration station. Go online, buy your tag, and then go back to the registration station and tag it." So I did that. Then he's like, "I can meet you at your place after that." So he met me at our place. And again, we talked about it and everything like that. But it was just, I think it was, he couldn't, obviously I appreciate it. But it was just, I think, I would have hoped he handled that situation with anybody in the same situation. Because it wasn't, you know, malice intent, you know. I mean, I called him. But he could have. I mean, he could have wrote a ticket.
Right.
You know. He wrote me a warning, so actually no other warden could do anything after that.
Right.
Which I thought was great, you know, because it was just, it still gives me a little gut rot when I think about it.
I've had, I'm not going to mention the exact situation, but I had a situation, and it was completely just same scenario. And the feeling that you get is like, because I adore, you know, it's like yourself, like hunting is a huge part of my life. Aside from my family, it's my thing, right? Like, it's what I love. It's my number one passion. And first of all, I don't ever want to, like, I am so by the book when it comes to hunting. Like, I always say, I always joke, I was raised by a father who stops at yellow lights.
Right.
And when it comes to hunting, I stop at a yellow light. If I'm not sure, I'm not doing it. And it was an innocent mistake. And I'm telling you, to this day, like, it's still, so I can empathize to some capacity. And it's refreshing to hear that the COs did what they did. I feel like we have a really good conservation officer pool. Like, you and I know a couple of the local ones that
I do too.
Super guys.
Hats off to them.
And that's, the, in my opinion, you know, and I'm not telling anybody how to do their job, but they have discretion. And I think that that's the right thing to do because you didn't try and hide it. There was no malice. You felt awful. And they can just tell.
Yeah.
And that's refreshing to hear. So, sorry it happened to you, but innocent mistake. You know, it's literally clicking the wrong button.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah, it was. So, yeah, it was, my stomach was in a knot.
This is the first time I've heard this.
So, yeah, it was, that's why the 20-minute hunt that lasted 2 days.
Oh.
Yeah, it was. But it all worked out. Very fortunate. And you know what? Even if he had to write me a ticket, still a good ward.
Right.
You know.
It's all how people handle it.
Yeah.
How they treat you.
Yeah.
So that was just a little one, though, right? It was, what, 150?
That would mean 204.
Oh, 204.
Or 202, however you want to
slice with that. Or without the genitalia.
And those are the only two deer I've ever done that.
You know what's
before.
Funny is, and I don't even know why I did it. I don't know if it was because I was in a rush or how I cut it or whatever. But this year, my main buck, that was 182, that buck I left the man parts on.
Yeah.
And my dad was giving me crap. He's like, what are you, a green plate? Sorry, green plate's out there, but why'd you leave that on? I said, Dad, I was in a hurry. It's actually kind of easier because you just kind of cut around it and then up, you know? I don't know. It's just what I did, so.
Yeah, and I guess I used to hang him in a tree all the time.
Yeah.
So I guess that really doesn't, well, I guess it can bring you luck.
If that brings me luck, I'll try anything twice.
That's how I grew up.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So last year you killed that really nice buck in New Hampshire, 10-pointer, 209, 208.
Yep.
And you and I have been chatting a little bit. We think that our Vermont buddies, now see, Joey, you gave me this podcast equipment, so you got to deal with the consequences. But we think they're keeping Vermont a secret a little bit because I've hunted Vermont. Now, I love Maine. Like, kind of. I mean, I love New Hampshire. Don't get me wrong. What's your take on that? Like, Maine or New Hampshire? Got to pick a state to hunt.
Well, I pick my home state, New Hampshire.
And that's me. Like, I have like a, just like a romance almost with New Hampshire. Like, but I love Maine.
I can't say anything bad about Maine.
I love Maine. And so I hunt New Hampshire and Maine kind of, that's where I put most of my effort. And if I'm successful in those two states and there's still enough time to kind of warrant it and I haven't burnt too much of the candle, the life, family, work, hunt balance, as I call it, because I think it's a huge part of being a well-rounded person isn't, you know, just giving up everything to go shoot deer because it's not realistic. But 2 years now I've gone to Vermont. In the first year, I had a really nice 8-pointer. I mean, I can't weigh him on the hoof, but I'm saying he's 150 plus, nice, 3.5-year-old. He bounded over this thing, almost took a shot, probably should have, thought I was going to see him again, didn't know there was posted, and ended up going unposted. And then not this past season, the season before when I shot that 8 with my father, Kirsten, actually my wife, was like, go to Maine, go to Vermont, go to Vermont. So I did, and we were just talking about it in the kitchen. I shot at that buck 3 times. And I think we've got some footage on that. So maybe we'll do an episode on Northwoods Whitetail's YouTube at some point. But I don't think I caught the shot, but I caught probably the beep.
Right.
Beep.
Right.
But two really what I thought were solid shots. And then a third that, in, you know, like I was saying before, I'm not a great shot, but I mean, I usually get them leaking and then, you know, I can close the deal and get it done. But. Yeah. So you hunted Vermont. Let's hear about that.
Well, I just wonder why the hell you would go to Vermont when there's no deer is gated. They don't cut anymore. Like, well, why would you ever do that?
Well, where I went, it wasn't gated, and they were cutting.
Well, that's what I found, too. There was plenty of cuts.
Yeah.
All age groups. Christ, roads are better than any roads I think I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
And there was plenty of deer. I think they've been, all the Vermonters out there have been trying to keep a secret from everybody.
Yeah.
You know, because I hadn't hunted Vermont in 25 years. And since I had, because I was deciding, am I going to go to Maine or go to Vermont? And I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna hunt Vermont. I haven't been there over in a long time. But I thought it was great. Christ, even when there was snow, they plow the roads, plow the turnouts. I'm like, it's like they're catering to hunters over here. Jesus.
I will say, if were you tracking it all?
Yeah, we had snow that whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
I will say, you can tell they've been tracked.
Yeah.
Mark and I, there's an episode on the channel, we double-teamed on one day, and that buck went with the wind at his back the whole time.
Right.
And I'm going, the wind at his back, and I'm going, man, a guy sitting on a stump could have a really good day.
Right.
With us behind him, but it was one of those deals where he knew we were on him, and he was taking us for a tour.
Yeah.
I think we were on that deer for 6 or 7 miles up and over.
Yeah.
And around and through, you know.
Yeah, I thought the volume deer was great. I mean, I'm trying to think. There was no lack of deer, and I would say at least 4 out of 6 days I was tracking a buck. You know, a couple of them were on big old journeys.
Yeah.
So I never caught up to them, but I caught up to two that, man, everything happened but me getting a shot.
No kidding.
Yep. It was, didn't want, I mean, one set, I was on one deer, got in a bunch of other deer, and it wasn't a great deer. So it was like, you really couldn't tell the difference, but it was a buck. It made a rub and that. And it was one of those 11:30s, which way do you go, what do you do type of thing, but you got to do something. And kind of got lucky, and all of a sudden, three fresh tracks come right down. I bump into them, the tracks. I said, well, hell, here's a buck and two does. So I got on them, and then, of course, they started feeding, went right in the winter beach patch, you know. I'm like, well, I'm not going to shoot them in here. So I bump them out of there. They let out of there, and then they ran into some older growth, you know, it was open. And it was like one of those, like, oh, perfect. Like, he was downhill side of her. And, like, she tried to go down. He, like, kind of corral her up and kept corralling her. And they were just going, like, side hilling. And they come to this brook, and she really started to go down. He really, like, they swung right up. And I wasn't too concerned at that point which deer I was on. I was just trying to, like, make up time and get close to him and try to catch him doing something. But I wound up, I was on him. And there's there's a lot of witch hovel up in there. And it's, like, chest high. And when he got into that, he started walking. I said, well, I'm like, I really wasn't concerned then either, because I'm like, he just stopped. Maybe he's like, where'd she go type of thing, you know? And it was just we were going uphill, and it was just kind of, it wasn't real steep at all. And it just went up, and there was kind of a knob out in front of me, and the brook was to my right. He was probably, I say 50 yards, but I'm thinking back, I don't even know it was that far. But I can hear all this racket and, like, all these, like, whips, like, getting hit and all this. And I'm looking, like, I'm ready. And all of a sudden, I see him come down the right side of that knob. I only saw him for a leap and a half. Comes out, crosses the brook, and it just happened to be a big blow down there with one of them huge root balls. So, like, as soon as I started bringing up, he's behind the root ball, And of course, he runs away from me behind the root ball. But what he did is he stopped running and just walked up onto that knob and bedded down. He was just on the left side of it, and it was not a big knob, but there just happened to be a big, long rock on top of that knob with a blowdown on top of the rock. So, if it wasn't, that stuff wasn't there, which, you can't control, but he, ran across that whole backside of that knob in a sense, because if that stuff wasn't there, he would have ran right out in the open, right across the top of that knob.
You still hunting with the 44 mag?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. If anyone wants to sell a 35 rem pump cheap, that's the only other gun I'll buy. All right,
we'll leave your info down below so people can get in touch with you.
You got to put it out there. not cheap, but you know what I mean. Yeah,
reasonable.
Yeah, that's the only other gun I'll probably buy in my life.
Yeah.
I should have bought one back in, I don't know, 20 years ago at Bean. They were like $350 on the rack.
My God. I look back at the prices and I'm like, man, I remember being in, I don't remember what gun shop it was, and they had those 308 military, the police versions, those little black carbine 308s. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, that's a nice little gun. It was like $499. Now they're $24.99.
Right, yeah, I know.
It's funny you say that. You know, think about how many bucks you've tracked, or even bare ground hunting. I think tracking in particular is more, like Hal says, when those two points connect. It's not just about that, too, though, because it's also got to work.
Yeah.
And that's why I have a lot of respect for these guys that year in and year out are able to kill nice deer, because you got to have, you got to have the skills and the woodsmanship and the drive and the time, right, which is also a huge factor for us, especially trying to do the balance. But then it's got to work. Like, you could jump that buck three times and just never, like the one that I shot in Maine there that my dad had wounded. It wasn't like I was trying to keep shooting at him, but every time it was just not, he was never presented me with a great opportunity. And then finally he did. It's just amazing how the variables can change. And yeah, and sometimes it goes the complete opposite other way, where like my main buck this year, I think he came back to that bleak can.
Yeah.
And you can go and go and go and jump that deer and just not get that opportunity, and then bang, all of a sudden he's right in the wide open and you get your shot.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's like what I was saying, I was thinking about two points connecting in the morning on that buck a couple years ago, and then I was walking up that winter road and he could have been 10 feet down over that bank.
And you never saw him.
He would watch me walk right by, and
yep,
I wouldn't have that story.
Yep.
You know, it's one of those things. You know, and it's like you can't make any mistakes, and they have to make one or a little bit of one.
Right.
It's one of them things. You know, like if... You know, I didn't really get into the mode of like, oh, he stopped running, he's going to bed. You know, yeah, you don't know that. I've been on so many bucks that have done everything that that would make you think they're going to bed, and all they were doing was fueling up and gone, you mm-hmm. know. And like I had tracked a buck, I don't think it was that week. I went back up for like another 4 days, went to another area, and got into an area and got on a buck track, and it was a good tracking day. And all of a sudden, traded up for a bigger one and a fresher one. And he got out of the cuts and got on a old truck road. And I was like, and this is Vermont again. And I'm like, oh, here we go. Like, he's just going to line out probably. And he stayed on that truck road, then there was an older truck road that spurred off of that, and he went up over that, and we were heading towards the top of this mountain, and we're going, and all of a sudden he cuts downhill, but he was going the same pace and everything, and then all of a sudden started feeding on mushrooms, and I locked it down. It was not in the best spot, because it was open, but it was all like that was an old like clear cut, but it was all like 5-6 inch stuff. No, it was all hardwood. So I'm like, you know, you're just scanning and looking and like, ugh, you know, you get like, it's stressful, you know, because he like.
You sound like you hunt like I do. I don't have, I was talking to Dustin and he actually does something I think is a smart thing. Like he was saying that the one that he killed, I think it was his one that he shot in the Adirondacks this year, that he got to the edge of some like opener hardwoods and he, I think he said he took his binos already, just scanned with his eyes. I think he said binos or scope. And he could see that way off. He could see, like, tracks. Like, they kind of – they were just lining out. All of a sudden, they weren't. So, he's like, okay, they might be here. And then he ended up spotting them. I don't do that.
Yeah.
I get to the hardwoods. I do a quick scan, and I'm gone. Yeah. Right? And I think that's probably why I bump a lot and end up shooting at running deer. So, I probably got to slow down. But so, you sound like me because you're like, it's painstaking.
That's my biggest struggle. That's like, if there's one thing I need to work on – it's like slowing it down. So I think like when I was tracking all the time in Maine, I mean, you lined it out. Like you know, all of a sudden, boom, you'd be into some does, bumping them all, checking if he was gone, you all of a sudden you see his track and he is lined out. So I think a lot of that conditioned me to like not be as, to slow down as much as I needed to when I had the sign. Because I've, you know, you see deer, there's, you've seen, when you see every scenario, you're kind of like, I have the mindset like they, yes, it, all that does matter and it all does, it's all true. You know, everything is true, but when is it true? You know, like I've seen him feed, you know, you like,
I know, I'm
it's
glad
hard to
you're
say,
saying this
I guess it's like,
I'm glad you're addressing this because it's something that I struggle with a lot. Like I could tell you countless scenarios where I've tracked a buck and I can tell you like right now I'm thinking of one and I tracked this buck for, I jumped him 5 times and this deer kept taking me through bedding areas and he kept feeding and he kept looking for a place to lay down. And I think that's what he was doing. But then all of a sudden he'd line out and I don't know if it's because he smelt a doe or if, like you said, he was just fueling up. And And, you know, so, yeah, and I agree with you because you there are those textbook moments, you know, like the one that we were just talking through some of the deer I've shot, the big wide 8. I tracked him for 5 or 6 hours. It was snowing. It was really hard to stay on the track. He did the textbook thing, like chased does, did his night thing, and then he headed up. He headed up once before, and I thought he was in a bed. Then he got down. He went and messed with some does again. Then he went back up again, and I'm like, okay, here we go. Now he's in a bed. And he fed, bed again, got up out of that bed, and I was on point, and I shot him at, you know, 25, 30 yards, got up out of his bed.
Yeah.
But there's those other scenarios where, and I think that's why, and I don't want to speak for you, but for myself, that's why I tend to hunt fast, because when I first started tracking, I feel like and felt like and feel still to this day that a lot of people do this. A lot of my friends that I know that are trying to get into tracking, I feel like this is what they do. And again, I'm guilty of it myself for a long time, is you're following deer tracks. You're not tracking. To track, you have to change your speed to catch that. If you're not catching him, you're not in the game. And so once I figured that out, I went on him fast. And then if I jumped him, okay, here we go. Because for so many years, I would track him, and go all day and never see him.
Right. And I was the same. I'd rather jump one and know it's a half hour in front of me.
Yep.
Than really kind of not know. And even when people like ask me like, what should I do? You know, to track. I'm like, first thing, track one till you jump it. Then you can take the next step. Stay on that same track and jump it. And then we'll talk more.
Because you learn so much with just that one experience.
Yeah, and you gotta catch him no matter what.
You gotta catch him.
You know, you can tell. You know, you can see all this, everything he's doing, all this stuff. But if you never catch him,
he could be 3 hours ahead of you, 5 hours, six right. hours, seven.
Right, and then you can take a step back and say, okay, I saw this, this, and this before I jumped him, and then you start to get that recognition of, okay, this is what he did, this is what happened. you know, kind of Monday morning quarterback.
Yeah, I do a lot of that to myself, that's for sure. I'm sure you do too.
Yeah, and like I said, it was tough because it was all that, it was all that 5-6 inch stuff, but so you couldn't see that far, but in the right spot, you could see pretty dang far. And I did slow it down, and I'm scanning, and sure enough, he was probably 50 yards, and my eyes aren't as good as they used to be. I get contacts and glasses now and stuff. And saw it get up, but sure, he's, you know, a little bit wet and that, and he was running away from me, but, like, it looked so dark to me. And like, is that a moose or, you know, like, you know, I don't need to be making a mistake, you know, like right. that. But I'll tell you, that deer, I want to shoot a deer I'm tracking, but that one, he had such a club foot, like it was like a block he had. And even his, like, joints in his bed, like they were just like knobs. Like, ooh. I was like, I would have liked to seen that one.
Right.
You know, I would have liked to seen that one.
And, you know, that's funny that you say that, because that's, to me, like a lot of people say to me, they're like, you know, what is it about tracking that you love so much? And again, I talked about hunting in New Hampshire and kind of the romance of hunting your own state. You tend to, you know, you think about this ridge that you hunted last year and you can't wait to get back there type of scenario. And for me, it's that, like when you're tracking the deer and you see that and you're like, oh geez, that's cool. Like, what's that? What's this deer? Like, is he old? Is he a young deer with a weird foot? Like, why? And then you start to, at least I do, I start to fantasize. And I mean, dude, most of the deer that I track are 300 inches. You know what I mean? Halfway in, oh my God, look at the size of that bed. And I'm excited. And it's the thrill of the chase. And it's the hunt. It's the pursuit. And I think, not to get off topic, but I think that that's one of the things that I see in our youth, in the commercialized hunting that we're seeing today with social media, is that a lot of our practices and what we do and how we do it is kind of deleting the journey. And there's a lot of things that devices, cell cams, you know, and I use some of these devices. I don't use cell cams, but I use some of these devices like Onyx, which is a great tool. But, you know, if you take all of these advancements that we have and you start to look at them, you kind of are starting to take the journey out of it to some extent.
They're great tools to utilize but not rely on. You know, I say that about GPS. When it was only GPS, that was like the cutting edge, you know.
Right. And you know, for me, the way I use my GPS is I look down at it and I'll go, okay, that's north. And then I look down at my ball compass and I put it away.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's an aid. It's not, I'm not relying on it. I don't walk around with my GPS on staring at the thing. You know what I mean? Right.
But a lot of people do.
A lot of people do. So. A lot of people don't carry a compass and then their phone dies and our conservation officer friend we were just talking about has to go rescue him.
Right. Exactly. On a Saturday evening.
Right.
And he's leaving dinner with his family.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I mean, I used to see that a lot guiding. Guys would be like, are you sure that's, is that big enough? Is that big enough? And these are people that would come up and they want to learn how to track. And I'm like, it's what we got right now. You know, like everyone says, you can trade up, you know, or trade for fresher, you know, size or fresher track. And like, we got to start somewhere, you know, because I'd want them to go back to wherever they're from and track a deer. I don't know, start, track a four corn. You don't got to shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to shoot it, and then keep building, you know, and maybe you shoot a four corn this year, and the next year, yeah, maybe you do shoot an eight corn or something, or a 200-pounder or a big buck or something, whatever it is. But you got to practice like anything else.
Right.
You know, it's like today, like, yeah, I want volume of weight for my tag because I like eating them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to be done that early in the year trying to, you know, eating the thing. You know, I want it to last a little bit. But the deer I'm whatever track I'm on that day, that's the deer I'm going to shoot. It's kind of, this is the game today. Excuse me, because it is really the chase.
Right.
That's what I love is the chase. Mm-hmm. Just chasing them. There's a lot of times that I've come out of the woods, maybe not feeling as good as I shot one, but I felt pretty damn good because I was just like, it was just a good day, good chase, like snowing, the wind blowing, you know, just like, just makes you feel good. You
it's
know?
Awesome. It's,
yeah, you know, yeah. Just like.
And I want, like, that's one of the biggest things that I want for some of my friends. Like, I've got this guy, Chris, that I met. He's a local guy. I ran into him hunting locally, and he actually tracked a buck for the first time this year. And I happened to be in the same area, and he texted me, and he was all excited. He jumped the buck and all this stuff. And it was kind of cool to kind of follow along with him. And I want people to understand that it's the journey, and celebrate the hunt more than the animal, because they think that that's something that we're all, I'm guilty of it too. Like, and I want to shoot a big deer. I want to shoot a big deer because I like looking at the bone on the wall, you know, and I like to eat them. So I like the volume like you're mentioning, but it's just something that I'm very passionate about. I really want to, that's kind of the message I want to get across is, you know, the passion in the pursuit, like you're talking about is in, dude, you don't talk to a big woods hunter or a tracker that doesn't have it and doesn't get it, because you do. And I can hear it, you know, in your voice.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. It's, so each to his own, you know. People got to take that own journey on their own, but it's, yeah. I think people are missing out when they just get too focused on certain things, you know. Get to that, you know, yeah. Get to that point where you can be like, yeah, I don't want to track that deer, but you could get there,
right?
You know,
right?
Like Christ,
you know. Yeah, and for me, like it's, you know, I get, and I think time's a big variable. Like, I had a guy recently, like, you know, not that I shoot that big a deer, but I've been fortunate, and I get a lot of time. And he's like, you know, how do you do it? And I'm like, honestly, time. That's one of the biggest things that nobody talks about. Like, a lot of these guys that are shooting these really nice deer, they have the time to be able to put in the effort. And if you have the time, then you have more, what you said is good tracking day, right? I call that a kill day. Yeah. When you have a kill day, it's snowing, it's blowing. Like, you know, I get about 3 weeks usually on average, which is a lot of time. And if you have 3 weeks, I usually say you're lucky if you have two or three what we call kill days. Some years you get none, some years you get one, some years you get none. So, but I try to, you know, capitalize as best as I can on that day. And if, like you said, the buck I'm tracking is the buck I'm trying to shoot that day. And
yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would never throw a stone at anybody that's got all season to hunt. God bless them.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because, I mean,
I'm
really,
envious.
Yeah. Because for me, like when I moved to Jackman and I was hunting 5 days or 5 weeks a year, that might take 5 years to get the experience I got in one.
For most guys, it is.
Right? I mean, you think, like, I go up every year and I pound it for a week. That's great. Like, you took a whole week off of work and you're doing a week. Like, no one thinks that's, like, not that much time. But when you've got the time and you can do that, I mean, like, your knowledge and experience grows exponentially when you have that much time. And then you're seeing a whole season with conditions and how the season plays out and what the deer are doing, not just within that window of that 1 week, but the 5 weeks, and you're hunting different those 5 weeks, and you're seeing how those deer change, you know, through that whole season. You know, it's great. I mean,
it's awesome.
It is. I mean,
and then you also have those days where you're like, you know what, today's not the day. And I say that a lot to people. I'm like, you know, I try and pick and choose the days that I go hard. Yeah. Because you can't go hard every day. At least not, you know, super hard. At least not as old as I am. As out of shape as I
hear
am.
You there.
So we've been talking a lot about tracking. I know you're a successful tracker. So let's hear, and I'm putting you on the spot here, but let's hear your favorite or one of your favorite tracking buck stories. I'll give you a minute. We'll do the Jeopardy.
So I'll tell one about a hunter that I had when I was guiding. I think that was the first year we hunted. It was it was one of those scenarios. We had actually, I used to take my boat up the lake, take my hunters up the lake and hunt the end of the, at the end of the lake, just because it was an experience. You know, I didn't want to just put someone in a tree stand for a week and they, you know, all they see is this cut for 6 days and they drive in the dark and come out in the dark type of thing. I didn't like to do that. It's effective, probably the best way to do it if you want to kill one. So we actually went up the lake on Thursday, 70 degrees. I actually one of the hunters, I had two guys, a two-on-one, and one of them saw a buck, could have shot it, passed it up, and we met back at the boat. We literally took the seats out of the boat, put them on the beach. It was like, and sat on the beach. It was like literally 70 degrees. So the next morning, going to go back up the lake to a different part of the mountain, and we jump in the boat in the morning. It's snowing up top, raining down bottom. Got a big west wind, and I had a 16-foot Starcraft with like old 35 Johnson on the back, and fire up the motor. Everyone's set. Everyone's got, you know, life preservers on. I go to throttle out, and something screwed up with the linkage. So the linkage isn't working, so I'm not going anywhere. So I go back, take the cowling off or whatever off the top of the motor. I got like a 10-foot piece of something. I tie that to the throttle, and I got one hunter right next to me because it's like a one of them with a steering wheel. So he's sitting next to me, and I got Bill. Dean's next to me. Bill's sitting behind, facing backwards. So I give him that. So he's throttle. I'm telling him like how to, like how much throttle to give it. And so we start up the lake. So we go up the lake. And so going up the lake, I'm thinking like, well, at least we got a west wind, because who knows what it's going to be when we're leaving in the evening. So we'll be going with it, because it was like white caps when we were going up. So I pull it in, tie the boat off, and Bill's going to hunt this area, and Dean and I are going to go up. Like, we'd swap off every day. I'd hunt with one of them. The other one would hunt the area and what have you. So Dean and I strike off. We go up to the – we get, like, literally to the top and see this track come across. I'm like, I know what we're doing for the rest of the day.
Good one.
Good one. Like, a good one. So I'm like, this is, you know. So I went back and back. I just like, I'm going to go take a little walk. So I just backtracked him a little bit. He got up out of his bed and just started walking out of it. I'm like, huh. You know, it was odd. Because it was more like, it was snowing heavier than anything. It was like 6 inches up top. Nothing down bottom. And 6 inches up top. So we get on him, we're going, and then he just starts going down. And it's still not snowing down by the lake. So we come down, we cross these railroad tracks. There's workers I can see working on the tracks. And cross that. Now it's getting down by the lake, soft wood mixed in. It's getting, the leaves are wet, so the snow is not accumulating on the leaves as fast in certain areas. So it's getting patchy, so I leave Dean on the track, then I just go up nice and easy and circle, wave him up, and come up, and we just kept, like, leapfrogging. So the lake is, like, 40 yards from us. And all of a sudden, just there's this... a rock that's like probably 2.5-3 feet tall by 4 feet wide, and all of a sudden it looked like a giraffe getting up on the other side of it. But just the way it got up, he was just his neck slung up coming out of his bed, and he had like handlebars for like a rack. Like, just I could just see the big main beams, like, but you could see the whole, like, them just out and wrap around, and then, like, tines coming up. The deer starts running away from it, and it's open. Like, it's open. Like, he was not expecting anybody to be down there. And so I'm just, like, waiting for Dean to shoot. And then the deer goes, starts turning. Now it's broadside. And I'm like, what, like, is going on now? Because I'm like, no shots yet. And now I'm like hollering, shoot, shoot, shoot. And the deer just, and then it actually like turned and went away and then like went back to the right. Like, and I can still see it. So I'm like, you know, it was kind of like silent for a minute, you know, like, Dean, what happened? He goes, I just kept thinking I was going to get a better shot. And I'm like, oh. So, in, you know, but he was from Pennsylvania, you know, he had a bolt, like he just, you know.
Having guided, I am literally, as you're telling that story, I am reliving.
Cringing.
Oh, reliving some moments.
Yeah, so we sat down, and we're going to give it a little time. And I probably shouldn't have said it, but I go, Dean, I really didn't mean it, like, in a bad way. But I go, Dean, he was so dejected, like, dejected sitting there. And I said, Dean, I'm like, a lot of people go their whole life and never see a big buck like that. Like, but I didn't mean it. Like, I was just trying to be, it was a sad, sad example of trying to be in positive. But, So we kind of.
It's so hard in that moment to hold your true emotion because you're a hunter first, right? You're a guide trying to provide a great experience, but at the same time, you're a human being with emotion. And I had a similar experience, and it's the only time. I mean, I professionally guided for fishing for a very long time,
yep.
And moose hunts, and I've only lost my cool once.
Yeah.
And if he's listening, he's going to laugh because, and I know he listens to the podcast because he sent me a message. I literally, and I apologize, I snapped my shooting sticks over my knee. We had I was a giant. I mean, a booner moose. And there's a whole long story to it, but I can feel it. And it hurts.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. And it's his hunt. I'm like, hey. You know,
exactly. Like, and it's so hard. It's so hard.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that poor bastard, it didn't end there. So.
Here we go.
We got on it again. And again, we're just working out the tracks as we can go. And it, you know, he was started running there. So it actually made it a little more difficult because he was, you know, them big bucks can bounce so far. It's kind of like, you know.
Where's the helicopter that picked this thing up?
Right.
Where did you go?
Right. So we get going, and there was just this little, I don't even know how big, it weren't a big opening at all. And I'm just like, this would be a good spot for that buck to check his backtrack. And it was literally one of those, like, I moved some hemlock boughs or whatever out of the way. Freaking thing standing there on the other side of the open and broadside. And I'm like, Dean, right there. And the buck was running left to right, and he started coming over my left shoulder. But I wound up, like, I can't remember how I did it, but I was like, he's like, he was running that way, so I was going to be in the way. So, like, I pushed him the other way. And, like, I saw him for like 3 or 4 full bounds at like, I don't, it couldn't have been more than 40 yards. It was like, whoa. So, Jesus, Dean, you're lucky. We never see a buck like that twice. So, and I had marked my first spot where we jumped him. It was a half mile. So we wait. So then we get on him again. And now it's like snowing and blowing still and snowing and get on him again and headed up the lake. And all of a sudden, and we went another half mile because I, from my GPS, I know this now, we went another half mile. And all of a sudden, hear crick crack, and there he is, the ass and antlers. That time he let one rip at it, and I could taste that gunpowder. He let the, you know.
That was the year.
He was letting it rip. So he let it rip, and we never did touch it. So we're walking back, And then now I'm like, oh man, it is the now we can you see the lake again. I'm like, it's like white caps. So
you're done tracking the buck. Now you got to get back.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we go back down. We're walking the railroad tracks down. And this is one of them times where the stuff you remember is nothing about hunting. But we were walking down the tracks, it's snowing, and then the train was coming. It was cool, like just the headlight and like,
you know,
it was like picturesque. So we get down there. Now I'm like, now I got to find Bill. I'm like, oh, man. So I get on the radio. I'm like, Bill, you there? He's like, yeah, I'm right here. Like, comes in clear as a bell. Like, I can't believe it. I'm like, yeah, we're at the culvert. He's like, yeah, I'm in the culvert. It's a big 6-foot culvert. He was standing underneath us under their tracks, you know. So we get down to the lake, and the boat is, like, still tied on, but it is, like, tight out in the water. So I yard it back in, give them their freaking life preservers. I'm like, put these on so they can find you, you know. Like, it is bad. So they're in there. I got the throttle, you know, rope all set, and Bob's there, Dean's there. So I shove out into the lake. It is an old, like, 65 Johnson, like 35 horse, but like 1965.
Vintage.
Yeah. So I jump in there, and that thing never started on one pull. Boom, one pull, perfect. So I'm like, jump in my seat, I'm like, blah, 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 you know, just backing out, getting ready to go. I'm like, Dean, hit it. Dean, hit it. I'm like, Dean, throttle, you know, we're starting to like go backwards.
Shoot, Dean, shoot.
Yeah. So all of a sudden he's like, I am. It was a 2-cylinder, fouled one of the plugs. So all we got is headway speed. That's all we got. Can't throttle or nothing. So blah 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 blah. The waves were going faster than we were riding waves going down the lake.
So it was to your stern, though, so you were at least going with the wind again.
Yeah, because we were headed east, so we had that west wind put, gotcha. Like, so we're, like, gotcha. Riding, like, literally the waves were, like, woo, like, pushing us down right. the lake and, like.
Like the day I took you fishing.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So we literally just, the whole way down, just blah, blah, blah. I'm like, there's an island with a camp on there. I'm like, do I just pull in there and someone will come get us, or do I push it? But of course, you always keep pushing it, you know. So we finally got back. So that was like a full experience, right there.
Oh for man, those guys. I would bet you that those guys cherish that hunt probably more than, again, back to what we were talking about. Like that, I call it the suffrage. Sometimes the suffrage, you know, is way better. I shot a deer one time, and it was like a 3-mile, just shy of a 3-mile drag, and it was awesome.
Right.
Like, it sucked in the moment, but the stories in the I had a buddy that was helping me drag it out, and the laughs, like.
Right. Well, yeah. Yeah, you take pride in that accomplishment, you know, or the suffrage, you know.
The suffrage.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Steve Rinella calls it the suffrage. I kind of stole that from him. But.
Yeah, I shot an elk in Montana, and I was alone, and. As a crow flies, it was a mile, and I didn't know frame pack or nothing like that, and I wound up, I even, like, split the back legs, thought, I was in shape, I was, like, 35, like, I was in shape, and, like, I split them back, I scunned it all out and everything, and then I cut the 2 hind quarters off the spine there, and I thought I could get up underneath them, you know, and, like, nope, I'm like, nope, but I got that thing out, and that was the biggest part of that hunt was getting that whole elk out, you know. That's what I really remember about that.
Right.
You know, it was.
Yeah, I have a hankering to do that this year. I really like to do, like, a real backcountry remote here in the White somewhere. I don't care what I shoot for a deer other than just the experience.
Yeah.
Like, sleep in a tent, shoot a buck, quarter it, pack it out, because you can do that now.
Yeah, I do it in Vermont, actually.
Do you?
No, I said you should do it in Vermont.
Yeah, let's go. Let's do it. We'll film it. It'll be fun. Are you filming? I mean, for the listeners that don't know, Kevin Harrison was one of the OGs of self-filming back in the day. You've got a lot of stuff on YouTube. I remember one of the videos that I don't know why I always, when I think about you filming, I go back to this one. It was it was a big buck, and you're just filming it, and it's hunting season.
Yeah.
And I'm going, shoot the deer. I felt like you and Dean. I'm like, chew.
I know. You know, yeah, I just, that's the thing. Like, you kind of get into the filming business. You're in the killing business, and then you get into the filming business, and you got to make some sacrifices.
It's true. It's tough.
And I would have got a shot at that deer, but a doe, you know, I was just focused on that buck, and it was a bunch of other does, but he was behind, so I kind of thought everybody was, you know, already ahead of him, and he was coming lagging up behind, but there was a stray doe that come up to my left, and I never saw her, and, you know, I just moving around, filming, and I think I did something, I might even put the camera away or something like that, and she wound up catching me, and they all just reacted. And,
game over.
Yeah, he was a real wide one, too.
Saw a big buck.
Yeah, and I chased at him around. Shit, I shot at him three other times.
Do you remember? Is that like? Is there a name on that on YouTube if people want to find it? Do you remember? Has it got a title?
No. No. I think no. If it's on the video, Bigwoods Bucks, second volume there, whatever it is.
Oh, it is on that?
It's okay. On that, and then I think if you went to like the McEwen's, the yeah. Outfitter show, they put all those out on their TV show.
Oh, cool.
So you can
see. Yeah, I just remember seeing it. I thought it was just like something you put up, but I don't know. I can't remember.
Maybe.
So are you going to film anymore, or you still have a hankering for that, or no?
I do, but I don't. I do, because it was about the challenge mm-hmm. of that. That's really what it was, like the challenge to do it and to help get more content. That was really what spurred it, just to help get more content. And then you know, obviously the challenge of it and trying to do it. I will, you know, I'm not again. I bought another like three. I think someone stole my original GoPro, but I loved it because I knew how. Like it was like on off.
Mm-hmm.
Like I, but then I.
I'll
bought
show a, you some stuff on mine. It's pretty. The new stuff's pretty cool. Some of the stuff you can do with them.
Yeah, and I bought a newer one, and then I was like, I'll just figure around again, and then I just haven't.
Yeah. Well, what I love about the whole filming thing, and part of why. You know, I'm doing what I'm doing here with you today, other than it's a blast. Like, this has been fun. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks again for coming over. But I just love documenting it. Like, it's so cool to look back on. And I love watching my old videos. And I've been filming my hunts for years. Like, I get a bunch of stuff in the archives I'll probably dig out and make some shorts of and some videos and stuff. But it's like something you can look back on in 10, 15 years. Not only can I tell my grandchildren, if I ever have any, or my daughter when she's 18, and say, hey, you know, see this deer. She's probably going to be sick of hearing about it by then. But but it's just, that's the part that I think. I mean, you think about, like, pictures are great, but a video?
Right.
It's the story played out in front of you. And it's very fun learning, being able to tell that story through the lens.
Yeah.
And I admire a lot of these videos that we watch on YouTube and other platforms, but because some guys are really good at it.
Yeah, I love watching everybody's, and you try to keep doing it, and you know, if you haven't done it, start doing it.
Absolutely. Well, I think we're about an hour in, and I want to say thanks again for coming over, and you know, hopefully we'll get out there hunting together one of these times. But
anytime, we'll hit Vermont.
Let's go to Vermont, dude. Let's go stack them up.
That's my next goal.
We'll do is we'll do another one of these next year around this time and talk about the big bucks that we killed in Vermont.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
No one's hunting over there anymore, it seems, so there should be plenty of room.
Yeah. I'll tell you, like I said to you when we were talking in the kitchen there, I've only been there twice, and I should have killed just like you. I should have. But I will say this. I think they have, like invisible bulletproof vests. Yeah. Oh, that one still haunts me, and he had such a rack. Oh, yeah. But all right, well, we're going to wrap it up. Thanks again, Kevin, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Thank you.